ωραίο κι όμορφο.
Hello, Greenhorns. This is Severin, and I'm glad that you can join us again for Thursday's Greenhorn Radio, radio by young farmers for young farmers. I am joined today on the radio by Olivia Sargent down in Athens, Georgia. Olivia, are you there?
I am. Hello.
Hello. Welcome.
Thank you.
Tell me, Olivia, what is the weather like down in Georgia right now?
It's beautiful. It's 65 degrees and sunny and very autumny.
Well, here it is autumny and gray and very cold, and I just watched the birth of a dead calf, and so I'm feeling a little glum. So it's nice to hear about your sunshine.
Oh, that's so horrible.
So sad.
That's so sad. Well,
Olivia,
we just birthed a farm cart. We just birthed the street cart this afternoon, so that's a little bit more pleasant.
Would you mind introducing yourself and the project that you're working on?
Sure. My name is Olivia Sargent, and I'm the owner and general manager of Farm 255. We are a restaurant in downtown Athens, Georgia, and we run a biodynamic farm about 4 miles from the restaurant where we raise all of our meat for the restaurant, as well as about 50% of our produce. And we source from other local growers for the remainder. And that's our gig.
And how long have you been working on that, and what were you doing before?
I've been doing this for 5 years. The restaurant's been open for about 4.5. And prior to moving to Georgia to start the restaurant, I was farming full-time in the Bay Area in California and teaching food systems education for a nonprofit called Next Course, which goes into low-income communities and sort of directs a curriculum of culinary skills with a background of sort of all local food systems knowledge, how to shop at the farmer's market on food stamps, how to make baby food from scratch, how to grow your own in your backyard, that kind of thing.
So it's very much in the same vein, but now you have a business around your love instead of a nonprofit around your love.
Right. Well, actually, that's why I moved out here. It's a little bit easier to get grant funding and go out and do altruistic things, and it's a little bit harder to try and plop your ethics into regular revenue profit driven models. So we're still experimenting with whether it works or not.
So you're in 5 years, and you tell us about the restaurant. Like, if somebody was walking in the door right now, what would they see?
They would see a retrofitted trailer covered in galvanized steel with vegetarian banh mi's coming out the door on our patio. But we're highly seasonal. We change our menu every day for the most part, and we're very pig-centric, lots of pork. We do our own sausages, a lot of charcuterie, and vegetables, of course. But it's housed in a historic building, and so it's got a very distinct feel. We're also a full bar and a live music venue, given that Athens is such a dynamic music hub for the country, especially for young people. We decided that we really wanted that component. So we're kind of a one-stop shop for everything.
Bacon, beer, and music.
Yeah, and some politics thrown in, you know.
Let's talk about pigs. We've been talking a lot about pigs on the show, and I just butchered my pigs last weekend. And it was great. We made back all the money that it cost us to raise them in, over the course of the workshop and selling a little bit of pork. And so let's talk about your relationship with the pig and where it's been going recently.
Well, we raise mostly Tamworths on our farm. We have a few Berkshires also. Eventually they'll probably cross, we suspect, because that's what pigs do. They're all forage raised. They've got about an acre right now that they're moving their way through. Obviously, inside of a restaurant system, pig is an animal that's really easy to maximize. We purchase all of our animals whole and move through whole animals before we purchase another or slaughter another. That's a lot harder to do with a cow. It's easier to do with a pig because you have very little bone loss. Almost all of, you know, your yield you're able to use. And it's a much more fun and interesting animal from a chef's perspective. We do pay on hanging weight for all of our animals, and so there is always a little bit of loss after that in terms of blood and liquid and, in addition, bones. But you get a lot less with pig. You get a lot less loss. But for our, even for our cows right now, we average around 10% loss in between hanging weight and yield weight. So just making sure that you can make all of that money back in the restaurant because you're putting out a good bit at the outset is kind of the key to the puzzle. And conversely, from a farmer's perspective, the fact that we pay on hanging weight, of course, is incredibly stabilizing. They've fronted the money to, or they've already invested the money to raise the animal, and then they've fronted the money to slaughter. So if they recoup that in one fell swoop, it's incredibly beneficial for the farmer. From a cash flow perspective for a restaurant, it's quite difficult when you're talking about, you know, an animal that weighs 800 to 1,200 pounds like a cow. So we're very lucky because we work with our own farmer, our own farm, and so we can actually find a happy medium where we parse out those payments into, say, two or three checks instead of one. He recoups his money rather quickly, and we can actually manage our cash flow a little bit better. So
two different businesses, farming and restaurant management, both of which have really slim margins. And so whenever you're finagling the kind of logistics of these kinds of exchanges, everybody's got to be careful and savvy.
Yeah, and I think the key is sort of convincing restaurants that there is a way to do it. And obviously from a chef's perspective, having a whole pig brought in or a half of a pig or a quarter of a cow, from a butchery perspective, it's such a growing resurgence of love for that artisan trade. It's exciting and it's fun, but it only works for the manager and the owners if you can actually recoup your investment on it. And so sort of peppering the menu with various different cuts, all of which you pay the same price for, is how you kind of have to manage that. And we still are working at that, but we've built a couple of tools that kind of break it down for us rather easily, and had some, you know, developed some gimmicks to figure it out as well. But
so what's the toughest sell? And I mean, with us, for the pigs, it was amazing. Like, all this sausage, that seems like an easy sell, but what's the toughest sell?
Yeah, definitely being able, that's why we started making our own sausage, because we can grind a lot of trim, not being the bad parts, but oftentimes the best parts, but cuts that are not as easy to sell for $20 a plate. The hardest sell right now for us is still probably offal, but we make great strides. We have tongue on the menu every night, and we hide it in a taco, and we sort of dupe the rural Georgians into ordering the beef tacos, and then we let them know that it's tongue. I mean, it's on the menu. They just don't read the fine print. So, but we do mess around with trotters and sweetbreads and heart and brain and all sorts of different things, and those are still difficult. We're not in a foodie community down here. We're sort of trying to raise one simultaneously. So it's a steep learning curve.
So you're spending quite a lot of your energy doing basically educational work still, even though you're managing a restaurant.
Well, that was our goal. I mean, we're all sort of community-minded agriculturalists. We were never restaurateurs, so it's difficult to be a waitress at Farm 255. You have to know a lot, and you have to talk a lot. There's definitely an indoctrination that happens, and we are deliberately educational, decidedly educational. I sort of like to joke that we support our local farmers, local agriculture first, and second we educate the community, and somewhere around third we serve dinner.
And the number, and do you break even too?
Yeah, absolutely. We do. Luckily, we actually make a profit. It's definitely not a big one. It's not on the margins of a regular restaurant. But we certainly have been successful, so we're very grateful for that. It depends on how you measure success. I think we've made a huge imprint in the community, and And I think the adventure is still figuring out things, you know, like how to take a whole cow and make it work for both the farmer and the restaurant manager, especially inside of, you know, a regular restaurant with regular margins, or regular being, you know, cost margins that you really are constantly striving towards, which we are as well. We're not holding ourselves to a different standard necessarily, but we're understanding if we don't meet it.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the matrix where you're operating in Georgia. Not too long ago, I was down there, and I heard a statistic that there's, I think it was 84 million acres of agriculture in Georgia, and only 5,000 of them are organic. Is that right?
I don't know what that statistic is, but whatever it is, it's probably tripled since you were here, Sev. It's insane how much in the 4 years the community has grown. When I was first here, I spent 6 months looking for, driving around Georgia and Tennessee and Alabama and Mississippi looking for sources and visiting farms that would be potential vendors for us. And there was really very little to choose from. And now I feel like I'm almost, you know, offended and insulted on a weekly basis because there's some other farm that some other restaurant is sourcing from that I've never even heard of.
Wow.
And it just seems like it's exploded down here in a way that probably California exploded, you know, 15 to 20 years ago. So we're behind, and we've got very paltry resources to work from given how decimated the land still is from industrial ag here, especially in the southeast. Zero topsoil, zero fertility, backwards mentality, and very, very strong industrial ag embedded in the roots of every town and every community. So every organic farm is definitely next to chicken houses or, you know, an industrial pork production system. That's not an easy environment, but I think it's more heartening to think about the strides that have been made down here. So,
and so in terms of running a business in a smaller town environment, what's the difference for you as a business person, like dealing with the bureaucracies and just, I don't know, like Farm Credit or Farm Bureau or those kinds of institutions? Are they a little bit skeptical of organic? I mean, does the bank want to give you a loan, or how does that play out?
You know, we've been lucky enough to not really have to dabble in that world too much. I think what's more confusing is really the presence of the university and how it operates. The university is one-third of the population of the town, and it's 35,000 people, and it's the oldest state sanctioned university in the country, and it's one of the best ag schools in the country. And there's almost zero presence in terms of alternative, non-conventional organic ag in the school. And there's a tiny little environmental club, and my business partner, Kate, was the first graduate of the organic certificate program from within the horticulture department, and that was last year. So it's different climate, and I think it's still dominated by sort of an old-school ag mentality. But at the same time, I sort of like to look at that as an opportunity. So, like, for instance, last week I guest lectured at an ag econ class, which I do every year, and it's a bunch of seniors who are learning how to basically put up processing plants and how to take their knowledge of agriculture and put it into the business world. And I'm sort of the alternative model speaker. And the week before me, the owner of the local Wendy's came in. And the week before that is the guy from the cotton production plant. And so I'm staring at a room of 30 camouflage-clad, Carhartt-wearing cattlemen sons who have no idea what I'm talking about. And so I just try and dress appropriately so they can better relate to me. I always wear boots and jeans, and then maybe they'll listen to what I have to say.
Well, it doesn't help. It doesn't hurt that you're such a cutie pie. I'm sure you're much cuter than the head of the Wendy's restaurant.
I don't know. You know, there's a lot of Southern Belles down here, so.
So there's all these kids going through this school, and they're not quite getting the opportunity to see alternative paths for the, you know, professionally for their initiatives. What would be our ideal? Like, what would it look like if we had a land-grant university system that was taking as its goal to raise up a new generation of forward-thinking soil stewards?
Well, I think obviously it's got to be slow and methodical. You can't plop down Santa Cruz's agroecology program into the University of Georgia and expect it to succeed, just like you can't put a grain-fed cow on pasture and expect it to succeed. So I think things are moving in the right direction. They're just slow, but everything's slow in the South. So it's sort of thrilling to be a part of that progress, and that's why I moved here. I could have stayed in California and sort of filed in right behind, you know, the rest of the legions in Alice Waters' army, but I think it's more interesting to be in the bush with the machete a little bit. I think what it would look like would be just potentially a stronger faculty base in terms of our university, and some risk taking in terms of the university and their hiring, and I think they are trying to do that. And again, you do have within, say, the extension program, you have a lot of people in their 30s and 40s and 50s being hired by the extension program that do have alternative ways of thinking, and they are trying to infiltrate the old world ways, and I've definitely seen that, and that gives rise to some, you know, funding and backing of new farmers markets and sort of the underground push that still happens at kitchen tables, and it's just slow, but you know, everything takes money and time. Those are the two basic ingredients, and carbon and nitrogen.
So if people have money and time to invest, other aspiring small business entrepreneurs and the agrarian mentality, what would you what counsel would you give now that you've been doing this work for a few years? How would you counsel them to apply themselves to the frontier?
To the entrepreneurs or to the courageous funders?
Well, we need them both, but I'm
right.
Usually more like talking to the entrepreneurs. But if there's any funders listening, maybe you
can I think the best thing that all of us can do is carve out a little bit of time to galvanize infrastructure. I think that's something that we all get lost in our individual projects, and I certainly do. And I've just sort of started to reposition myself within my business to make sure that I do have time to attend the chef advisory board meeting of the Georgia Organics, which is our local nonprofit that's really working so hard to push the envelope in all directions in the Southeast. And that's a 3-hour drive for me, an hour and a half each way, and it's got to be worth it, I think, because it helps to create. That way I can participate in the ideas that eventually become projects that eventually become time and money, and then we eventually have a functional local food system with all of its different pieces, with CSAs, with farmers markets, with young farmers, with old farmers, with sort of widespread knowledge, farm-to-school programs, restaurants, buying clubs, the whole gamut. So I think my advice to young entrepreneurs would be, obviously, dive into your project, but carve out time and energy and space for working with others and for collaboration and for building systems that you all can lean on and support each other with. And I think, you know, New Hampshire High Mowing and all those guys and Jasper Hill, what they've been able to create in terms of how they support each other is really an amazing model, and I hope that we are helping to build that here in the Southeast. We're just a little behind. We've been visiting
well,
them for too long on the porch.
the way that you've been going, you're going to get there sooner than you think, I'd say. So for you, that like applying yourself to the logistics and to this more structural elements of the food system and building that out to where there is, you know, meaningful and material collaboration between different players at various scales, for you that mostly figures in around meat, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, that's just because that's what I'm most interested in, and that is actually the most difficult piece. It's the most difficult piece for the farmer to get rid of the whole animal, and it's the most difficult piece for the restaurant to take the whole animal. So that, to me, is the most exciting place to actually build structural tools, to build a toolbox for that chef-to-farmer relation, so that each one understands the other. And then, of course, there's the distribution, which is smack in the middle of those two, which oftentimes in this system, either the chef or the farmer takes on themselves. And so really rethinking what the distributor role is, what is the job of the distributor in the new food system? And I think it's the job of educator or translator between those two units. But it has to be a vested interest distributor. It has to be somebody that understands both the causes of the dilemmas of both of those worlds. And so that's a kind of huge missing piece. But
so that's an area where we need to be doing some recruitment for the protagonists of the middle.
Yes. Well, you have your fleet of bicycles, Sev, and I want a fleet of reefer trucks.
I want to get your fleet of reefer trucks to come up here, and maybe we could do a workshop together. But I'll talk about it off the
off the air.
But I just have an idea because we have to do it. I want to teach a class about how to cook out of a box of meat so that everybody knows how to buy a box of meat and cook out of it. And that's the next event after the duck cluck, but we'll talk about it later. Olivia, it's so nice to have you on, and it's so nice to get to see you occasionally and hear about all the things that you're doing. I wanted to make sure that you were able to talk about your favorite online or otherwise resources, other people who are interested in this kind of a career path should definitely check out, and also your own personal website.
Our website is farm255.com. It's pretty basic. We've got a lot of good resources on there. And I have to say, frankly, I really rely on sort of those person-to-person relationships for me right now to stay inspired and to stay in touch. I'm not an avid surfer, blogosphere, addict, face, tweeter spacer, because I'm still looking, well, because this is how things operate down here. I mean, when you want to buy a house, you drive around in the neighborhood you want to buy a house in, and then you find the house you want to buy, and then you buy it. So that's pretty much how things work down here. And it's not to say that there are not amazing internet resources, but it's not something, like I said, I'm still trying to carve out enough time to be having the face-to-face interaction with folks that are really pushing policy and pushing community action down here, rather than reading about it. I do love my quarterly issue of Meat Paper, I will tell you that much.
Yeah, and those Meat Paper kids are coming up to Brooklyn. I just organized a goat for them. They're having parties next week
with
Meat Paper and Diner Journal and all sorts of pork-oriented people.
Yeah, Diner Journal, they're pretty great, too. I'm still pen and ink and paper. You know, I still have my subscriptions to the New York Times that gets delivered on my door every day. So,
well, Olivia, thank you so much. I'll call you up and we'll talk more about other things. But
okay,
it's really great to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me on your show, Sev. It's great that you do this.
Well, thank you all for joining us. This has been Greenhorns Radio. We're here thanks to the support of the Hearst Family Ranch, which is grass-based beef out of Northern California. And we are delighted to have Olivia from Farm 255. Come join us again next week, and we'll be talking to a bean farmer from upstate New York. And if you haven't been on our blog lately and seen the pictures of our butchery workshop, you really should do that. It's www.thegreenhorns.wordpress.net, and they're really beautiful pictures, my beautiful pigs. Thank you so much. Talk to you next week.